evening. Welcome to the Salieri Report. Today is Thursday, November 16th, 2017. I'm Catherine Austin Fitz, and I'm delighted you could join me this evening. Richard Dolan joined me this week for an interview we'll be publishing next week, and we had a chance to chat about our trip to Uluru in Australia in May 2018. And we've made a little video. It's up on the left side of the website, and we'll send it out in a special notice to subscribers tomorrow. It was in today's update as well. We've created a second group because we got more demand than we could fit into the first group. So we still have 8 of the 20 spaces available in that second group. So if you're interested, log in so you can read the brochure. If you have questions, let us know. We'd be delighted to answer them. Make sure you sign up if you're interested by Christmas. Give the gift of the Salieri Report. We've been doing this every year for several Christmases, and we love doing it. This Christmas season, we invite you to give a gift to one of your friends, members of your networks, colleagues, of a free gift subscription to the Salieri Report. It will last through the end of February. That means they'll get the full 2017 annual wrap-up with the theme. It's going to be pension funds this year. And they'll have news, trends, and stories with Dr. Joseph Farrell and the annual equity overview, as well as some of the top first quarter Salieri reports we do, including the emerging multipolar world with Saker. So very rich lineup and a great gift to give your friends. And we do this for subscribers. We kept having people who are expert at marketing recommending we give free offers to strangers. We said, no, we'd rather give that to our subscribers. So there it is. Give the gift. If you know who you want to give your gift to, please send the name and the address, phone number, and email address to customer service at salieri.com, or feel free to call customer service if you would rather do it by phone or have questions at 866-311-2543. Our theme tonight is Save Yourself. Waiting for the Cavalry is a form of suicide marketed as entertainment. There are lots of tactics designed to prevent you from touching the third rail. The third rail is my name for where the real power and money lines run. We've talked a lot on the Salieri Report about fear porn, and fear porn keeping you away from the third rail and sending you down all sorts of rabbit holes which do not translate into actionable intelligence. But there's also something called hope porn, and I have been getting a lot of questions or inquiries related to hope porn this year. There are different versions, and it was particularly bad this week, which is why I'm mentioning it. The white hats are doing this, and they're rounding up all the pedophilia rings, and they're all going to come and save us, and it's going to be great. And then when the theory of why that's going to happen next week, it doesn't happen. Oh, it's this and that and blah, blah, but it's happening, and it's, you know, you're just not seeing it. Or, oh, the Asian elders are going to show up and use all their capital to fix everything, and everything will be fine. So that's what I call hope porn. And for the people who don't relate to fear porn, you can always trick them in hope porn. I don't have to do anything. I don't have to talk to my state legislators. I don't have to shift my bank. I don't have to change my habits because the white hats are going to come and fix it all. And they didn't last week, but it's really going to happen this week. Another one is the big payday. This has been the Donar scam is a perfect example of the big payday. Various trusts. Bitcoin is a real bubble, and so there is a speculative payday if you know when to get out and when to get out right. Or, you know, as you can see, if you get in at the wrong time, it can be down 25 to 40%. But if you listen to Bitcoin, the app, I think it has quite some distance potentially to run. It depends on how Mr. Global wants to play it. But this week it was the Black Eagle Trust as trillions of dollars, and it's coming, and the big payday is here. So in addition to just straight hope porn, there's the big payday, and that sends people off into a variety of what I would call sort of trances, wasting their time and wasting the time of those around. Of course, hopelessness op was another way to get you to avoid the third rail in addition to fear porn. But don't fall for the hope porn. If you want the world to be a certain way, then you're going to have to go build it. And what's important is not what everybody else does. It's what you do. And I don't want to hear that you're unimportant. And so you don't have the time to change your bank because it doesn't matter because you're too unimportant. You have to understand if each one of us does what we can do, a mighty army arises. So don't worry about anybody else. Worry about what you did. There's a great line in my discussion with Richard, which you'll hear next week, where he just says, look, this is about me living my best life and doing the best I can. That's what it's about. Great book review this week. It's the next by Jason Worth in the series that he and I have been doing about how addictive technology is used to hook you. It's called Glow Kids, and it's really about the kids getting in a trance with the tablets and some of the other technology, and I recommend it to you. And then a great new one from our Culture Scout called A New Food for the Soul column, a review of Geostorm. Very interesting. I love those columns. Twice a month. Money and markets. The U.S. dollar index now down a little bit more. It's down 8.24% for the year. Fixed income, the long treasury ETF, up 7.53%. The intermediate, 2.7%. The bond aggregate, 3.2%. And junk still holding in there at 5.8%. It's backed off a little bit. Equities, the S&P still chugging along, up at 17.35% this year. The home builders still outperforming the S&P at 23.19%. The European ETF, 23.23%. Germany, 26.6%. Developed markets minus North America, 21.75%. Large cap, China, 35.2%. Small cap, 35.5%. Emerging markets, 33.7%. So everybody's outperforming the United States, the S&P, and that's not surprising since the U.S. has so outperformed since 2009. Commodities down to now down, the commodity index now down 2.2% for the year. Gold up 10.76%, silver up 6.68%, still holding despite all the different pressures coming from money sucking away into the Bitcoin up. And then oil down 7.42% for the year. It got up as high as down 2% for the year, but is now dropping back down. Well, the House passed the tax package today. That's a huge political success for Speaker Ryan. He said he wanted to have it done by the 28th, and he got it done by the 16th, which is quite aggressive. He badly needed a success after a very long, arduous year with Obamacare and a variety of other setbacks and very bad wrangling politically between the Congress and Trump. And not Trump's not a leader who helps to build coalitions, although he seems to be getting a little bit better at it. Anyway, so the bill is through the House, and we can see what it looks like now. It goes to the Senate, and the Senate is a whole different story and has in fact been working aggressively on it. Part of it was Corker, who's one of the deficit hawks, agreeing to a tax cutting package over the 10 years, and that creates sort of an envelope to fit tax reform in, which makes it much easier for something to happen. The Treasury is saying that the package is revenue neutral, but other experts are saying it will add to the deficit. And the deficit hawks in the Senate, who are Republican, are being surprisingly quiet. I would point out that Rand Paul was attacked by his neighbor, very suspicious as far as I'm concerned. That may have something to do with the quietude. Paul submitted an amendment today to repeal the Obamacare mandate, which will make things easier for the package in terms of the deficit. But it also means a lot of people are going to end up without health care. Now, many of them would prefer to end up without health care rather than be part of the mandate. So it's got an interesting complexity around that one issue. Part of the problem is that if the package does start to result in increased deficits, it can trigger different pay-as-you-go rules, which will force cuts in spending, including in things like Medicare, which the president has promised he wouldn't be doing. It's just a reminder. I've done an interview, which we'll publish in the last week of the month, with Joe Klein about the coming perfect storm in healthcare. There's a real a real inability of the system to handle the capacity needed, including the economics of it, which is why the kind of cuts that could happen in Medicare, if the deficit balloons, could be pretty significant in terms of impact. Both the House and the Senate bill are centered around a corporate tax cut from 35 to 20%, which would be permanent. There are a lot of issues now around the corporate rate, which I'll discuss in a second. Some of the most contentious issues are the repeal of state and local tax deductions. That's going to hit the states with high income taxes very hard: New York, New Jersey, and California. So they're still wrangling about that. They have kept the deduction for property tax deductions capped at $10,000 to try and win over the New York and New Jersey Republicans. But this is much more pitched to the heartland. There's also caps on the mortgage deduction for houses after $500,000. So expect the local tax deduction, state and local tax deduction, the mortgage deduction, and the property tax deduction to be all part of the wrangling that's going to happen before the tax bill can pass the Senate. Another issue which is very interesting, and I'm surprised to see it happening, is the GOP senators are backing a Republican House proposal to impose a 1.4% excise tax on investment income at private schools with endowments worth at least $250,000 per full-time student. This would hit Harvard University very hard. I can't imagine an institution that deserves it more. There was a Wall Street Journal editorial by two very clever finance professors from University of Washington this week, that basically, or last week, describing Harvard University as a hedge fund with a university. In fact, it's true. Harvard Corporation is a corporation with an endowment and operations, and the university is simply a small part of it, and it's all designed to make the investment syndicate go. It's a way of managing intergenerational capital without having to pay taxes. And I assure you, the amount they send over to the university is significantly less than the amount of taxes they would have to pay if they were taxable. And I assure you, if you look at the way they're run, if there's anybody who produces a negative return on investment to the U.S. government, it's the operations of the Harvard Endowment. I've read a lot about that. So it's interesting to see them, even in a tiny way, starting to be called out. So that's one of the things that will be debated. I think one thing much more scarier than to me is the House bill is proposing to cancel the deductibility of student loan interest. And if you look at anybody who's gotten a big student loan and then has gone to places like New York, New Jersey, or California to work in a high-income state to be able to pay off their debt, they're now going to not be able to deduct their state and local taxes, and they're not going to be able to deduct their student loan interest. I'm not sure how that works. It seems like another attack on the most important group of people we need to be productive in the future. So let's see. I want to withhold judgment because you have to see how these things sort through as the pig goes through the snake. To get this to pass in the Senate, the Republicans can't afford to lose more than two senators. We have one senator already saying he's going to vote no. So they can afford to lose one more before they're sunk. Of course, we know McCain had said that the tax package was dead on arrival, so let's assume he's too. They can't afford to lose anybody else. So now the Republicans could get themselves in real trouble here, even if it passes. If you look at corporate taxes, they've come down steadily as a percent of GNP for several decades now, while revenues skyrocketed as in relationship to GNP. So corporations have been taking over more and more of the economy and paying less and less of the taxes. Also, if you look at the corporate taxes, the percent of the total IRS take, they've also fallen, although not as significantly as a percentage of GNP. But the real power of the comparison is when you look at how their revenues are skyrocketing as a percent of GNP. So we've been, you have a giant sucking sound of profits and revenues into giant corporations, very much served by government and government criminality, sort of engineered to do that. It's privatization on the just do it method. And so for corporations to have to pay less and less taxes when their externalities are greater and greater and they're commanding a bigger and bigger share of the economy is a pretty risky thing. Now, one of the reasons the Republicans are doing it is they want to bring a tremendous amount of capital into the country and rebuild the industrial plant. And if you're going to do it fast, and do it on a highly centralized basis, then you need the corporations to do it for you. The problem is we've decimated the small business economy, and we continue to do so. And if we don't address that, then nothing is ever going to work. The fortune chart that I've described several times in this Larry report, and I show in the speech I gave at the Nexus conference on cryptocurrencies, says it all. You have Fortune 500 revenues tracking with the GNP from 1955 to 1995, and so they kind of rise at approximately the same rate as the GNP, and then suddenly in 1996 they take off and skyrocket relative to the GNP until 2017, to 2016 and 17 when they start to sort of bump down. What it means is they've increased enough between 95 and 2017 to have increased for the whole period 55 from to 2016 by 8,500, more than double the GNP, which increased by 4,500%. Of course, both of those percentages show you how much the currency was debased in the meantime. But the reality is you're basically you've got a giant sucking sound of all economic value activity into publicly traded corporations. And that's been the stock market game. That's why I wrote the Dylan Reed and the stock proc the Aristocracy of Stock Profits book, was to show you sort of how government greases that game. Government does things that make the stock market go up, and then political contributions are financed with the capital gains. So the Republicans are trying to reduce the taxes to keep the game going, because that's about the only way to keep the game going right now. Now the question is, if they do that to suck back all this capital into the United States and try and rebuild the productivity and rebuild the manufacturing base and the industrial base in the U.S., including as a platform to go into space in a very big way, the question is, will that capital go to growth and increase in productivity, or will it just be more financial engineering? Was very sort of unnerving. Gary Cohn was speaking with a group of CEOs and asked the question, who was going to use the money, or the moderator asked the question, who was going to use the money for things that would produce growth, and almost nobody raised their hands, and you should have seen Cohn's face. But a perfect example of this dynamic is, look at all the big mergers we're watching. Hasbro bid for Mattel, Emerson Electric for Rockwell Automation, AT&T fighting to protect its deal with Time Warner, Broadcom bidding for Qualcomm, Comcast and other suitors sniffing around Fox. Looks like Fox is in play. So what you have is people sort of buying mature operations as opposed to trying to start anything new. So whether it's a stock buyback or mergers, it's not a good sign. And of course, we know manufacturing, industrial, we're putting tremendous investment into AI and robotics. So even though we keep hearing that employment is good as for anybody who's good at sort of doing the 3.0 activities. If you're not positioned for 3.0, there are no opportunities for you. So if you combine what's going to happen to the replacement of labor with AI and robotics and the pressure it's going to put on income to labor, and then you load on things that make life even tougher for young people, such as removing the student loan interest exemption. How's that supposed to work? Because remember, young people are a very important component of what makes money for corporations. So if they can get lots of young people cheap, which they certainly can, if you continue to make getting a great education more and more expensive, and you take away the interest and other deductions that young people need. But Let's wait and see how this thing, how the sausage looks when it comes out of the next part of the sausage factory. In the first week of December, Patty Kemmerer will be joining me for year-end tax planning in 2017. And one of the things we're going to focus on is what looks like it may be coming down the pike when we record that on December 5th and what it means to you and your tax planning. So we'll be addressing the individual pieces of this package that may affect any of our subscribers. It's a very good quote from Peggy Noonan in one of her latest editorials about watching what's going on in Washington, particularly after the election. And she made some very cogent points. I wanted to read them to you. She's referring to the Republicans and Democrats. The parties are each in an existential crisis. The Democrats split between the Sanders-Warren progressive vision and the old Clinton vision will fight more passionately among themselves as 2020 approaches. The Republicans are left knowing that day by day Mr. Trump is crashing. The wiser of them suspect that when he's gone, what replaces him is nothing, because the Republican Party is riven and no one knows what it stands for anymore. In both parties, there is too much distance between the top and the bottom, and both ambivalent leaders are chasing after voters they no longer understand. Those are very wise words. It's not clear to me that Trump's support is crashing. I think he may be a bit stronger than Noonan suspects, but suffice it to say, I think there are so many problems that are not transparent or not being addressed. The system literally cannot function with this much lack of transparency and this much opaqueness. Now, the system thinks it can with sufficient force and mind control technology. That's one of the reasons we focused on Control 101 in the third quarter wrap-up. I just don't believe it's going to work, but it certainly has the capacity to make things both weirder and more gruesome. The regulators are now out to get Google. One of the things that is happening, we're seeing a very significant backlash against Silicon Valley and the tech industry. We had the EU slap Google with a major fine, but now you see the state regulators going against them. One quote from the newspaper, Mahaney said several unnamed venture capitalists in Silicon Valley CEOs see antitrust as a significant issue for the big tech companies in the future. He said a venture capitalist he spoke with suggested that an antitrust action against Google may be the first successful bipartisan act in the U.S. in 10 years. Yes, and that is one of the advantages of not having Clinton win the election, because Google was basically going to be running Washington if the Clintonistas had gotten in. Another thing that happened is Zuckerberg's little presidential exploration trip around the United States is not going so well, and there's been some funny comments about it. But what you see is the Silicon Valley is so out of touch, even more out of touch than the leading Republicans and Democrats. And so, in my opinion, the tech blowback has only begun and has the potential to get much, much stronger. Oil and gas changing. We now see the Norway Sovereign Wealth Fund come out and say it's thinking about dropping oil and gas investments because it has enough exposure. Of course, the wealth fund was built with a percentage of Norway's sales of oil. Norway is very oil rich. But it just goes to show you that they're positioning themselves for a world where oil and gas becomes much less important, or a world where we're transitioning more and more to other energy technologies. I thought that was interesting. And then I mentioned last week, but I think it's very important, the industry association announcing that oil and gas production in the United States continues to improve, that we're going to be a major exporter, and the U.S. taking the lead role in the oil and gas industry. It's one of the reasons I think that the Middle East politics are changing so much. Speaking of which, Saudi Arabia has now rounded up more than 200 princes, ministers, and businessmen. In fact, so many have been quote-unquote jailed in the Ritz-Carlton that they have now they have now commandeered the Marriott to house the overflow. and the crown prince is now making it's called freedom deals. Give up 70% of your fortune and you can go free. The Economist noted that for a young man, he's building quite a long list of enemies, and it's true. If you look at his position, I empathize. If you're trying to rebuild the economy and push the country forward in a world where oil and gas does not give you the same rich cash flow that it did, you need the capital, and you need the capital to be deployed in an economic way, and you don't have time to deal with big egos. I can understand why it's happening, and it very much reflects a desire to clean out the swamp here. Who knows how it will go? We'll just have to see. Sex is a political weapon. The use of sex as a political weapon is off the charts, and just hold on to your pants because it's going to get much worse, I think. So we have groping stories, George Bush groping, Al Franken groping, this guy groping, or people doing things with teenage girls. Basically, all of the stuff we're seeing so far is not focused on the really serious problem. I got really frustrated this week because there is a real effort to bury Judge Moore in Alabama. And so Glory Allred, who always, whenever she shows up, my hackles go up. She's an attorney who does a lot of sexual harassment out in California. Anyway, so she showed up with another quote-unquote harassment victim who, crying the whole time, explained why Judge Moore had made a very aggressive pass at her when she was 40 years ago. And she fought him off, and he accepted no and backed off. And suddenly this is as horrible as running pedophilia rings. So I got so sick of it, I decided that I would donate to Judge Moore. So I gave him $25 because the whole tenor and approach is so non-adult. And, I don't know. It's again, you're trying to have a political fight without pointing out the real power lines and the real issues, and you're trying to avoid talking about the real power and money issues. And I for one am sick of it. And the day we really want change is the day when the audience says, you know something, we're adults, we want to hear about the power and money, we don't care about all this stuff, you know, forget it. I'm not saying character issues aren't important, and I don't know what the truth is on Judge Moore. But here's the reality. You know, I worked for a cabinet secretary who I believed was a pedophile. I worked for a president who I believed was a pedophile, or certainly protected and promoted pedophilia rings. If you have any questions about that, listen to my Salieri report with John Rappaport on pedophilia. And I did another interview on the Franklin cover-up with Nick Bryan. It's in the archives. But we have serious, serious problems in terms of slavery and sex slavery in this country, and they need to be dealt with. And so it's very irritating to watch all the groping stories. It's almost groping is really sort of a way to avoid the real issues, although there are, I'm not saying real issues don't come up here, but I care a lot more about kids than I do about some of the crazy stuff we're hearing. Interestingly enough, the one positive development out of all of this is that I'm hearing more and more people come forward and understand that pedophilia is a serious problem and it needs to be discussed. And that's a good sign, because I've spent a lifetime with it not being socially acceptable to point out that it's a problem or discuss that it's a problem. And I think getting us to the point where we can start to deal with it and face it is very, very important. So I want to get down to dealing with the real issues, and so a lot of this stuff is minor incidents, but everybody is going to find out what their imperfection was. So just get ready for more of this. Transhumanism. Joseph Farrell has written and talked about transhumanism for a long time. Daniel Estulin has a great book on transhumanism. Transhumanism is part of leading us into a world that is not human, that is inhuman, and frankly evil. But it's a way of looking at a human being as though they're a natural resource to be created and molded, not an individual who's sanctified, whose characteristics are defined by nature, not something invented by some biotech machine. And we're seeing a lot of things being done to change the model from the model of what is envisioned in the Bill of Rights and the Declaration of Independence, the Constitution, or the sort of Anglo common law into something else. I just noticed this week, new report, DOD backs first service member sex reassignment surgery. Now, so yet again, the military is getting dragged in to help create this new model, which is unfortunate. Speaking of inflation, a Da Vinci painting of Christ purchased for $13,000 in 2005 and restored and authenticated by a group of art dealers just sold for $450 million at Christie. I'm having the video put up on the website, The Buyer's Secret, although I suspect it's going to be hard to keep that secret for too long, so wouldn't surprise me if we find out who it is. But it says a lot about the real rate of inflation, and frankly, as money is repatriated back to the United States, one way or another, I think the administration will be successful at engineering that. Expect inflation to increase. We're all going to be dealing, as the money that's been bubbled and floating around in this financial coup and securities game, it's going to come back and get reinvested in real things. And again, inflation is going to be with us. Not that it hasn't been with us, but it can, the rate can increase. Las Vegas, I just want to point out, I put up a story. Seven survivors are now dead in what I would consider suspicious deaths. The potential story and connections on Las Vegas just keep getting deeper and deeper. I'm not going to spend any time going down the rabbit hole on this, on the Saleri report, but I'm hoping someone is willing to dig in and figure it out. It wouldn't surprise me if somebody does. The connections to what's going on in Saudi Arabia look to be potentially significant, which makes it even more interesting. There's quite a story here, but it's going to take insider information or thousands of hours to figure it out. So I'm going to keep an eye on that. And, of course, on the what happened in what I now want to call Silicon Valley North in California to clear hundreds and hundreds of thousands of acres for what I suspect is a building out of Silicon Valley to the north. Our hero this week, I want to mention three people. One is Stephen Williford, who was the wonderful former NRA instructor who stopped the church shooter. A really marvelous man and a marvelous story. If you haven't watched the video of his interview with Louder or Chowder or some of his other interviews, I put up, very inspiring and a great example of why gun ownership is so significant and does such an amazing job of protecting law-abiding citizens. I can't stress enough to you the story of what gun ownership does to protect the law-abiding citizen and what could happen to the law-abiding citizen in many parts of this country if that gun owner was not there. And it's a perfect example. It's another perfect example of why they need assault rifles. It made an extraordinary difference that he had the weapon that he had. If he just had a pistol, it could have been a very different story. The second person I wanted to mention was Jaron Lanier, who is a real visionary of the technology world, has been for quite a while. And he gave an interview in the New York Times. Jaron Lanier can hear the digital future. And it's very, very insightful. Very insightful, and I can't recommend it to you enough. You can, I link to it on the Saleri report, but you can pick it up with a search. And he reams Facebook, and they deserve every bit of it. And finally, I wanted to mention Congressman Mike Kelly. I put up several videos of him absolutely reaming the IRS for groundless seizures. The reality is, you've got more than a few agencies. The IRS is one of them, running around and doing Sheriff of Nottingham extortion seizures, basically coming after innocent businesses stealing their money before they have the grounds or the basis to accuse them of anything. And even when they can't find anything wrong and the investigation is over, they refuse to give things back. So it's basically using the powers of government to run a for-profit business without regard to what the real law is. And it's enormously destructive of small businesses around the country. I did a fabulous interview with Howard Root, the former CEO of Vascular Solutions, a remarkable story of someone who fought back. He had been an attorney before he started his own company and built it into a very successful medical equipment company. And the feds came after him, tried to shake him down. He fought him back and won, but what a frightening, horrible story. He sold the company because he did not want to be responsible in this environment, in an environment where the sheriff of Nottingham can just come riding in and cost you $25 million of litigation expenses in 5 years of your life. The DOG, Department of Justice, has more problems. Mistrial was declared in the Senator Mendez's trial, the senator from New Jersey, who was indicted and prosecuted about interceding related to Medicare, related to a friend of his. And I've never looked into the allegations. I have no idea what really happened and whether this was worth prosecuting or not. However, if you look at what it was about, considering that there's $21 trillion missing from the federal government, and the Clintons ran an enormous pay-for-play operation through the Clinton Foundation and other unbelievably corrupt things, you know, pedophilia networks. If you look at all the different things that are going on, whatever Mendez was doing was basically bupkis in the scheme of things. And you wonder, you know, what is wrong here? I suspect the reason they went after him was strictly political, that this was pure politics. But it's another slap in the face to DOJ for, you know, honestly, if you let the rich and powerful, they keep letting the really rich and powerful skate or get out with a big fee. And the reality, it's one of the reasons that the system gets ever more corrupt because the enforcement mechanism is basically backwards. Let's go to the movies. Tonight, I'm going to mention one of my favorite movies I've recommended to you before, and Let's Go to the Movies is The Outlaw Josie Wales. When I lived in Hong Kong, you could go see a Clint Eastwood movie for 25 cents, and they'd line them up in theaters. So you'd have three theaters on a row, and you could go into one and see a Clint Eastwood Western for 25 cents, and then in the next for 25 cents, and the next for 25 cents. Now, those Outlaw Josie Wales didn't come out until I got back into the United States. It's essentially about a farmer who becomes a member of one of the militia during the Civil War. He's on the Southern side, and then when the South loses, he refuses to surrender. All of his colleagues who surrender are attacked and killed. And so he ends up with some mercenaries on his tail trying to run him down because he refused to surrender. And of course, that gets the Yankees gall up. So it's about his fight with a lawless government and trying to find peace in this world. And in the meantime, you have marauding Indians and all sorts of other risk, gunfighters as well. And really, the moral of the story and the message is that a message I've tried to deliver before, and that is ultimately for law to be real, for it to matter, for it to exist, it's not enough for it to exist in a book. It has to be an inherent part of our culture, an inherent part of our individual character, or it simply will not work. And part of it is believing in the law and trying your best to implement the law in how you conduct your life. But then the other is enforcing it when others are lawless. And Josie Wales explores all of those issues, and it does it in a world where you have multiple cultures and multiple tribes and economic interests competing for land and natural resources and power. And some believe in the law and some don't. And, you know, in many ways, if you look at it from that vantage point, it really very much describes what's going on in the world today. And there's a lovely scene where Wales makes his peace with the Comanches, and I put that scene up on the website. But it's one of my favorite movies. It's got many great lines, and it's of course classic Clint Eastwood. Our interview this evening is with Harry Blaser on gun ownership. I was very happy that Harry could join me for this. The gun ownership is a topic which is so misunderstood and miscommunicated, and in part because we have, I believe, a government running around engaging in false flags and engineering shootings, whether they're school shootings or church shootings, to try and force gun ownership. And so with every school shooting or church shooting, you have huge amounts of misinformation, smear campaign, and lots of money and time spent to lobby and push for things. The reality is that the government does believe in guns. We have, the last time I checked when I was in Washington, we had over 50 agencies, with permission to carry guns and to seize and arrest. And all of those agencies, or many of them, have significant corporate and mercenary contracting capacity. So, they have plenty of guns. And the biggest problem in the United States, as opposed to countries that have gone to gun control and not had as horrible experiences as many of the countries that have then experienced genocide, which is a significant number, the U.S. government basically is financially dependent, and the banks financially dependent, on an enormous network of criminals and their local gangs and snitches that generate massive amounts of money for politicians, the black budget operatives, and the banks they all finance and who finance them. So we have a country, this is the red button problem I'm always talking about, we have a country that's deeply dependent on organized crime. And the reality is there is a balance of power in many communities between the criminals, who will absolutely not give up their guns, and the law-abiding citizens. If you look at the statistics, as I make clear in the interview, and I don't want to take away from that, the statistics are profoundly clear. Law-abiding citizens are much better off owning guns or having trained gun owners around them. The number, one of the last statistics from Gary Gleck, who I think has the best book on this topic, point blank, you'll find a review of it up on the website, is approximately 2.5 million crimes are stopped against law-abiding citizens by the presence of a firearm. So this is a very significant contributor to reducing crime. And I know I live in a place where it's made an enormous difference, and I can't imagine what would happen here if the law-abiding citizens couldn't have firearms. One of the issues is that if you look at how long it takes the sheriff's office or the local police to get to anyone in America once their call is put in, that's precious time. You know, that's the difference between life and death in many situations. And so citizens really have to be prepared to protect themselves. Harry asks a great question in this about in this discussion. What's your plan? What is your plan to provide for personal safety for yourself and the safety of family and neighbors? You need to have a plan. And as he and I also discuss, it's not just a plan for putting up with a home or dealing with a home invasion with somebody who's got a knife or a gun. It's also dealing with things like mind control and Control 101. Interestingly enough, just as we published this Soleri report, we see several videos coming out this week about autonomous weapons, tiny drones that basically can chase down anyone, swarms of drones that are each bullets targeted at certain kinds of of targets. Basically, you're talking about robots that can kill without, and can make the kill decision on their own, basically on artificial intelligence. Pretty scary stuff. And it's one of the reasons why I think it's so important right now to enforce the law and do whatever you can with local and state government to make sure that these things are not permitted to happen. If we tear up the Constitution, you know, literally we could start to see drones operating and enforcing in very terrifying ways in this country. So check them out, but again, enforce the Constitution and get with your state and local legislators. I don't think there's anything more important. And don't be afraid to go talk to your congressman. Many of us have good congressmen like Marcy Kaptur or Mike Kelly. So get involved and stop reading the hope porn and the fear porn and go get involved because it's important. But more than anything, I want you to listen to this interview and think about what is your plan, because what I want to make sure of more than anything is you're safe. And the reality is we're seeing more, I think, or I shouldn't say we're seeing more, whether it's mind control or violence, I think we're facing a more difficult environment in many locales. Now, each person is different and each locale is different, but if anything, I do want you to have a plan and I want you to be prepared. Okay, ask Catherine. Question, in a financial reset, can banks legally change the terms of a borrower's note, whether it is a fixed rate or an ARM? Thank you. My question is, what is a reset? I don't know what a financial reset is. I've heard constant internet lore about the Great Reset, and I'm beginning to think it's either fear porn or hope porn. Again, there's no point in acting. We'll just wait for the Great Reset. I don't really know what a reset is. Now, here's what you need to focus on. If the Constitution gets torn up, depending on how badly it gets shredded and what they put in the place, what it means is that the leadership will control and own everything. So we could get slavery. We could get a seizure of all assets, no private property. I mean, the sky's the limit as to what could happen. So what you're talking about is the bank basically shredding your contract and holding you liable to a contract you have never agreed to. Now, that can only happen where there is no law. So this is not a question of finance. It's a question of law. And if you tear up all the law and create a fascist government under the control of the banks, then, you know, then in theory, there is no law other than they can take or do whatever they want. So as a matter of law, if there is no law and we're in a fascist banking dictatorship, you know, yes, they can. Remember, the U.S. government reserves the right to seize all assets of all citizens. And when Gaddaf FOIA'd them about the seizures of gold, that was the response they got, that they reserved the right to seize all assets. So I come back to the issue of, I don't know what a reset is, and I don't think such a thing exists. But rather than focusing on what the banks might or might not do if we get a major change in legal structure, you need to focus on the importance of not permitting such a legal change to happen. And it won't be a legal change vis-a-vis you and the banks. It'll be much deeper, much bigger. So I get back to the fact that this is a matter of law, and the most important thing you need to do is enforce the Constitution. Because if they shred the Constitution, I assure you, terms on your borrower's note is going to be the least of your problems. Hi, Catherine. In your blog, you have a video titled Gang Stalking and V2K Testimony by Private Security Whistleblower. You have a comment with it that says, CAF note, in my opinion, this is disinformation. And interesting is disinformation. Gang stalking is a serious problem. Having lived in Seattle, I can vouch for a lot of what he is saying, and I'm wondering what parts you thought were disinformation. That's good to know. I would have to go back and listen to the whole thing to pick out the pieces, but it sounded way too perfect and too scripted from my point of view. And also just an intuition. I don't think he was sincere. He didn't strike me as authentic. At the same time, I thought that disinformation had some pretty interesting information in it. And so if you're interested in understanding gangs talking, I thought it was worth listening to. There's a later comment from someone. Let me jump down to it. For the last 2 months, I have email contact with an old friend who is an extreme victim of stalking. I sent him the link from your website, Gang Stalking and V2K Testimony by Private Security Whistleblower. I thought the story was compelling. My friend replied that the storyteller was a fraud. I would leave it at that. Yeah, I think anybody who's been a serious target of gang stalking would, probably not believe it. But I thought it was interesting that they put it out, and it wouldn't surprise me if it got put out basically to take listenership away from the legitimate people who are really dealing with gang stalking. Anyway, recently you did an interview on the Kaiser Report with Stacey Herbert, and I was wondering what your opinions are on Max Kaiser. I have a conflicted view of him because he presents himself as a fighter of the good fight while pushing Bitcoin. I recall his war cry of buy silver and sink JP Morgan. We all know how that ended. Yeah, that ended very poorly. I saw through the delusion, the libertarian qualities of Bitcoin a long time ago, and have since stopped paying attention to him. It's hard for me to not look at him as controlled opposition leading the herd into the trap or just enriching himself by pushing up his vast position in Bitcoin. Curious in your thoughts. I had a real strong disagreement on the buy silver thing. I thought it was, it was basically just a very cheap lie because, if you understood how the silver market was manipulated and the extent of the federal credit was behind it, there was no way you're going to bust JP Morgan Chase over their silver position. And anyway, so I seriously disagreed with it. I thought people would lose money. Sure enough, they did. And in fact, that was at the time that I stopped being invited by Max. I think Max Kaiser is entertainment, and whether or not he's controlled opposition, I don't know. It's too When somebody's focus is entertainment, it's too hard to kind of track what they're saying and how they're saying it and whether or not, sort of how it tracks with how the money is being manipulated. But I don't consider him news, and I certainly don't consider him a financial advice. Now, what I do is I like Stacey's commentary. I think she's smart. I think she picks up on good stories. I think she has some interesting commentary. Someone else wrote in the category of hope porn. They sent me a link to Reddit on from somebody. There's a poster called "Calm Before the Storm," and the person who sent it in this week is not the first person who sent it to me. In fact, it wouldn't. It's really funny if you look at some of their postings. They're channeling. There's a certain kind of disinformation that sweeps up the best of the best, Farrell, Rappaport, Dolan, Fitz, and repackages it and feeds it back. And it looks like that kind of I put it probably in that category, but who knows? Anyway, so I wrote back, I wrote back another speech on hope porn and why you don't get lulled into not doing anything because the cavalry is coming. Don't believe it. The goal of all that hope porn is to get you to do nothing while they steal everything. Hello, Catherine. I think you will find this YouTube very interesting. It ties Nixon and George H.W. Bush to the Kennedy assassination. Please, 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 this keeps happening to me. Please do not send me anything about the Kennedy assassination unless you have read Devil's Chessboard by David Talbot, or at least listen to my interview with him on the Solari Report. David Talbot has absolutely nailed the governance structure for the assassination, who did it, why they did it. It is an absolutely brilliant, magnificent, beautifully researched, and beautifully written book. So if you want to talk about the Kennedy assassination, read Devil's Chessboard. If you haven't read, and while you're at it, you ought to read Mary's Mosaic as well, because the two of them in combination are so powerful. It really helps you understand the assassination, and then you see the entire way America's been governed since. It opens the door to understanding the governance structure in America. So please read the Devil's Chessboard, and please do not send me anything about the Kennedy assassination that is completely naive relative to that great book and that great analysis. Catherine, excellent analysis by the great Sibel Edmonds on Mueller. Yes, I posted it. It's about Mueller targeting Michael Flynn. By the way, have you considered interviewing her? Yes, she has been on the Salieri Report, and I'd love to get her back on the persecution of Flynn. I think it's very important. I think she is a superhero in the fight against Mr. Global. Yes, I agree. Anyway, I'd love to get her back on to talk about the persecution of Flynn, which is very gruesome and horrible. And I'd like to have her on and talk about it, see what we can do to help. Dear Catherine, your interview on whether or not we have cognitive liberty makes me ask, is there any technology at all that one can use to block the intrusions into the human conscious and subconscious? How about a Faraday cap? Surely there is some material and metal that prevents their ability to read the human mind at a distance. How about special glasses that filter or detect subtle subliminal visual signals, special earpieces that detect similar subnormal signals? What if you turned your home into a Faraday cage? You continue to send out the information we have to have. Boy, would I love all those things. And at various times I've tried to grapple with them. I will say this, the blue shield that Jason Bowden-Smith recommended has helped me a tremendous amount. It's really made a difference, but I would love many other ways of doing this. I have a friend who built the equivalent of a Faraday cage for his bedroom, and boy, is that wonderful. It really makes a difference. Anyway, so I'm not a techie who would be very good at doing this, but I would love it if many of you would go to work and figure it out. Because we do need to come up with different ways of really protecting ourselves from the technology or energetically sending love back through the satellites, and let's corrupt them with love. Anyway, so some significant help on this would be very appreciated, and if anybody sees great sources who are looking to help people with this, please send it my way. Now, I get back again to the issue. There's no technological answer or solution for a political problem, just like there's no financial answer or solution for a political problem. We have people who are breaking the law in a way that harms us, and that's got to stop, whether they're stealing all our money or they're sending, you know, subnormal signals into our brain without our permission. So this is why I keep coming back to enforcement, enforcement, enforcement. Anyway, so I'm very interested in enforcing the Constitution, and I'm not interested in all the people who say it's hopeless, because they have no idea, as impaired as it has been, you have no idea how bad it'll be if they can shred it. We're working on a new special report on efforts to enforce the Constitution vis-a-vis the NSA, and we hope to have that up next week, and then I've commissioned the first in a series of special reports on enforcement related to the Appropriations Clause. So I'm hoping as I provide more and more information on that, we can also move to action on constitutional enforcement. Catherine, for the past 2 months, I've had an email contact with an old friend who is an extreme victim of stalking. Okay, so this is the guy who said it was a fraud. Then I wrote back to him and said, I think the V2 testimony was likely disinformation. Hope you sent your friend biggerthansnowden.com. That is the best. If you want to learn about gang stalking, that is the best website, biggerthansnowden.com. And then he sent me an announcement that Thierry Misson has a new book, which looks very interesting, and I will take a look at that. I think he's a very good writer. Anyway, more comments about that. Hi, Catherine. Thanks for your answer to this in advance. I don't know if others have asked you, but there are so many areas of Salieri suggested things to do that it can be overwhelming for one person. You do a lot already. You cannot possibly do it all. So I'm wondering if we could parcel it out, wondering if the membership is mature enough now to make a members-only circle online and allow people to share their names who are willing to take a particular area at a time and work on it. I would love to find other Salieri members in Colorado, Utah, and network with them. We've tried to introduce people through lunches and events, and we'll keep doing that. We're continue to work on our new website, and it's taking much, much, much longer than expected. But I am reasonably optimistic that we'll have it up by the end of the year, early next year. And once that happens, I hope to be out and about doing more lunches and events. and to help you get to meet each other. Our experiences with trying to do anything online are absolutely dreadful. I think one of the reasons is online, you have to deal with a great deal of entrainment. There's always, all it takes is one bad guy paid to do disinformation to create trouble, and that's just not what we need. I want to stay very high integrity. So, again, I will do my best to make sure lunches and dinners are available for you to get to meet each other. Okay, in closing, there'll be no money in markets next week. Next Thursday will be Thanksgiving, so we normally don't have a money in markets on the last week of the month, but I'm going to switch them between the last week of the month and Thanksgiving. So no money in markets next week. Instead, we'll have a money in markets on the last week of November. But a real treat for Thanksgiving, the Deep State and Budget Politics Part 2 with Richard Dolan. Richard and I had a fabulous conversation earlier this year, which was the Deep State and Budget Politics, which was part one. And this is a follow-up, and it was only supposed to go an hour and a half, but Richard and I couldn't stop talking. We had a lot to talk about. And of course, this is the issue. It threads through everything. It threads through Obamacare, tax reform, you name the issue, and the dirty little secret of the black budget and the budget politics around the deep state are the thing that has got everything up in the air, paralyzed and messed up. And that's why I think what Richard has done to bring transparency to this whole area and to talk and work with me and others to help integrate the financial issues is just so absolutely marvelous. One of the things we talk about is his incredible new TV series on false flags at Gaia TV. It is absolutely fantastic, 11 parts. You cannot miss it. You cannot understand the modern world without understanding the false flag phenomenon. No one has organized and unpacked it as well as Richard, and he's now working on his book, which will be even juicier. So definitely listen to the Deep State and Budget Politics Part 2. And boy, on Thanksgiving, I'm giving thanks for truth tellers like Richard, like John Rappaport, like the Saker, like Dr. Joseph Farrell. My life is full of them, and God, I can't tell you how energizing it is. When I told you earlier, when I was in Washington, I got to see Dr. Mark Skidmore, and then I got to see Bill Binney in Baltimore. I got to see Dennis Kucinich, who I'd run into at the conference in Colorado, and then I got to see Helen Chapman, great attorney for the Madoff victims in New York, and it was just one great truth teller after another. It was so very inspiring. So this Thanksgiving, I'm giving thanks for all the truth tellers and all of you subscribers who make it possible for us to do what we do. And then November 30th, The Future of Healthcare, Prepping for the Perfect Storm with Jo Klein. Jo's joined me on the Salera Report several times. She has a great new book on the importance of healthcare literacy. The thing I most wanted to stress, because we just done one on healthcare literacy with Dr. Thompson, Jo's books do a fabulous job of helping you understand the demographics, the labor issues, and the economics, why we are literally walking into a wall with the healthcare system, where the healthcare system is not set up whatsoever to handle the baby boomer generation as it ages. And so it's incredibly important that we each take responsibility, build our little surfboard so we can navigate that wave, because we are coming into a perfect storm. And Joe does a great job of explaining. And then December 7th, a very interesting discussion with Patty Kemmer, CPA, year-end tax planning 2017. What do you need to know to be prepared to have your taxes ready to go in January? What do you need to do before the end of the year? I think it's very important to hear this information while there's still time to do something about it. And of course, there's going to be a lot on our plate to discuss because of the House bill is passed. Now the question is, will we know what the real Senate bill is going to look like, let alone will it pass this year? The administration is certainly going to do everything in their power to get it through by the end of the year. So maybe they make it and maybe they don't. We'll have to see what happens again in the Senate. So, great lineup. Thanksgiving, the Deep State and Budget Politics Part 2 with Richard Dolan. The following week, The Future of Healthcare, Prepping for the Perfect Storm with Jo Klein. And then I'll be doing my money in markets that week. And then December 7th, year in tax planning 2017 with Patty Kammer. It's never, a CPA has never been juicier than when you got a big tax reform bill flying through the Congress of the United States. So, ladies and gentlemen, that's it for tonight. Please remember, don't worry about whether or not there is a conspiracy. If you're not in a conspiracy, then you need to start one. Good night and good luck.